Even La Grève.
In French, I think it would be like, on est ici pour la grève.
Actually, in Portugal, they just, you walk in, okay, there you go, here, go.
Well, when I was first.
It is actually, how's the word? If you're there, you're there to support.
Yeah.
And it's instant. It's not like this thing you have to even say, hey, yo, we got another supporter here, you know?
I agree. I mean, especially in Europe. I mean, when I was in France one time, I was out driving with an ex-girlfriend of mine whose family was from this small town. One of her relatives was in the car who was actually, he worked in a bank, but he wasn't in a union or anything. And he kind of was apolitical. His parents had been farmers. And I'm like, stop the car, stop the car. And they stopped the car because I saw a picket line with a big tent. And it was a utility, a gas works or something. And he's like, why are we stopping? He got a little nervous. And I'm like, because I'm going to go talk to the strikers. I just jumped out of the car and ran to the picket, and my girlfriend also. And we just started talking to them, you know, and they were perfectly welcoming, and it was great. And then then I saw this guy years later, like literally a decade later at an event. And he's like, this is this French guy still working in the bank, still pissed off, kind of not young anymore like me. And we were just talking about that visit, that trip. And he goes, I still remember when you got out of the car and went to the picket line, went to the union on strike. I'm like, oh, you do remember that? Why? You know, it's pretty funny. But, you know, a strike is supposed to be a social thing. You know, when unions... in the past, when they've been more larger and more energized and more radical and more socialist and all that stuff, you'd bring your children and your family, and you know there was many examples of in predominantly male industries, like say early car plants, when they first unionized and going on strike, women played a huge role in the strike movements, setting up pickets and doing work in support of the strike. You know, girlfriends, wives, mothers, sisters, relatives, just, you know, key the whole thing. You got to get the community involved, you got to get everybody involved, and that usually doesn't happen now, unfortunately, in a lot of strikes. Maybe it's being rediscovered. One thing I read about unions recently that was very interesting is the people joining unions now, there is an uptick in union membership. It's not a lot, but it's there. It's solid. It's something you can point to objectively. Increase in union members per year over the last couple of years. And that trend is probably continuing. But it's from a very low level. I'm not trying to say that, you know, the labor movement is back. You know, it's still maybe rebuilding. Maybe we're on the cusp of some sort of bigger movement of labor. It's hard to tell. There's elements of it, like with the West Virginia teacher strike and so on. But what I read is that like 70% or something like that, really high percentage of new union members were millennials, meaning fairly young people. I think there's now a new generation younger than millennials, but fairly young people joining. And it used to be for years, starting maybe in the 90s, when they would track both a decline in unionization, that new union members... decline unionization goes back to 1953, to be honest with you, but it really started to accelerate in the 80s and 90s. But then when people were joining, even while the numbers were declining, newer members tended to be older. But now it's switched. And, you know, part of that is, you know, a generation retiring and so on, but a part of it is interest in unions by a whole new generation, or two generations now, the beginning of a new generation, that have much lower living standards. And it's palpable.
That and Generation, you know, X.
Well, that's older, right? Generation X is... Are you Generation X?
Yeah, because anyone born in 61 to 80... I think it's 81.
Oh, really? I'm Generation X too, then.
Yeah. That's Generation
X. Oh, we got screwed too, but not as badly, supposedly. We're talking about generalities here, you know? I mean, there's still people out there.
I think
there.
The 90s, the culture in the 90s, where there's, everything, you know, there's plentiful, you know, a lot of jobs. But what kind of jobs?
Well, that's what they're saying now in terms of pay and stuff. Like, I remember, you know, I mean, aging is no guarantee of wisdom, but if you do stay awake, and I mean awake politically, if you try to notice things, there are certain patterns. It's not history repeating itself, but there are certain similarities, certain equivalents, we'll say. Equivalency rather than equal. And one thing is, just what you were talking about, Diego, I remember 98, 99 was a boom period in the, and maybe starting in 97, a boom period in the U.S. economy. It was the high-tech bubble.
Self-made man, you know, right. Kind of attitude.
Yeah, exactly.
I can do this. I don't need
it. It was
I'm an individual.
It was the high-tech bubble, yeah. So people were, and I saw this up close and personal I had a girlfriend who was younger than me, and all her brother, her friends, and so on, they were getting jobs in the high-tech industry around Boston and getting paid a lot of money for starting salaries and having very little pressure on them. They're just like monkeying around with websites, not doing much at all, you know? And all of them.
Kaput.
Yeah, it went put very fast. It went down very fast. I was surprised at how fast it went down. Like literally one day, I had a picture in my head of what we're going to do next weekend, you know, because I'm going to get dragged along to some, you know, what I would call from my point of view, kind of a yuppie-ish kind of a party type thing in someone's house in East Somerville that they just bought. Like, what? Where'd you get the money, kid, to buy a house, you know? And literally that fell apart within weeks. Once it started to collapse, it collapsed rapidly. And they still weren't saying it was a recession or anything, but it was. A recession started in 99 or early 2000 that wasn't at the time recognized. I saw all of a sudden, though, people abandoning, all the people I could think of. I could think of about 7 people I knew in that milieu, in that environment. Only one survived. Still at Oracle, I believe. The rest of them were forced out of that industry and tried to become other things, you know. And I don't know if they survived or not. Oh, some did. I know a couple that did. But anyway, the point is that that thing went down really fast. And then 9-1-1 hit. And I mean, right after 9-1-1, they started to say, oh, wait a minute. There was a recession before that, and this has made it worse. Oh, okay, really? All right. Then you get that thing. Then you get the mid-2000s. Still kind of shaky time, not a boom time.
I would say, but then you get what you said. The job market started getting better because
it did, yeah,
after 9/11.
Yeah,
but then again, 2008.
Yeah, exactly. 2007, 2008, huge, the Great Recession.
I can tell you on my experience, Trader Joe's. Actually, I'm sorry, La Ronga Bakery. That was 2001.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that place. Yep.
2001. I was there for 3 years.
Yeah.
Job market got better. 2004. I went to Trader Joe's. All right, left there, went to what used to be Brooks, now is Rite Aid, and so on, so on. Then the recession. Then I lost that job.
Yep.
Then it was Shaw's. Remember Shaw's?
Yep.
Now they're gone. You see the pattern.
Yep.
Up, down, up, down.
And the wages getting worse or stagnating. And you were at Whole Foods before Amazon bought it up, but you saw before you were leaving, I remember we used to talk about it on the show, they would start take away benefits, take away hours.
Certain regions were they were laying off people. Oh, you're making 15, sorry. See you next year. You can reapply.
You can reapply.
Here's your package.
That's just great, yeah.
And here's the number to, what do you call it? employment benefit, you know, the unemployment thing, you know, where you can get unemployment.
Yeah. I would imagine under Amazon it's going to be worse despite their announcement of 15 an hour.
Well, you hear what Amazon wants to do in Boston?
They have around Whole Foods? No, I'm talking about Whole Foods. Okay.
Separate.
Yeah, okay.
Cash, without cashier places. You just go there, you order online, you just pick up your...
I've heard about that, yeah.
They're trying to bring that here. On top of that, they have Whole Foods.
Right.
So what's going to happen to those cashiers if they see this pattern?
Right, right.
Going the way it is.
Yep. That's an interesting question. I mean, we've talked about it on the show before, but automation seems to be kicking in more than ever. But the problem is that, from the point of view of the capitalist, is that it's still really expensive. So Amazon can set up one store that way. Let's see if it's going to happen to all the stores that way. Their warehouses have some automation, some high tech, obviously, but it's also very labor intensive there, and rotten working conditions and very physical labor and so on. So it's always been the mix under capitalism. Capitalism always uses that technology and tries to develop new technology to make higher profits, but it's also at the same time, And this is a contradiction, but it's part of the process under capitalism. At the same time, it is an impediment to using technology to its fullest availability, its fullest extent. There could be tons of things completely automated now, except it costs too much to implement that automation and too much to maintain it versus exploiting a human being or a laborer in that situation. Also, they don't cooperate with each other for the most part. The big businesses, they're in competition with each other. So say one business develops a highly automated system. The infrastructure might not be there for it. They can't get the government, the state doesn't want to put it in, partially because the businesses won't pay taxes and the rich won't pay their taxes or enough. And so you're stuck with that. You got to sort of, you want to be, as Marx talked about this in Capital, the socially necessary labor time at any given moment is not, it's you can get ahead of it as well as be behind it. And you don't want either one. So it's a balancing act. You know, the capitalists are all very similar at a certain moment in how they're producing things and distributing things. Or there's one big top dog like Amazon that the others have to start to conform to, or Walmart or whatever. But there's some uniformity there based on a combination of human labor, obviously, and technology. Say you're Tesla. Say you're, what's that guy's name that everybody hates, rightly so? The guy that runs the... I can't believe I'm forgetting his name. He's in the media all the time. Anyway, rich guy wants to go into space and all that. And just got
fined.
Smoking pot, blah, blah. Anyway, that guy. Anyway, so this guy, in terms of Tesla, if you study that or research it, he got way ahead of that socially necessary labor time thing. He brought in automation it didn't work right. It was part of the problem. Part of the problem was it was really, really expensive. And he had to pull back on it. All of a sudden go back to using more human labor. Now that goes against the whole sort of propaganda that we're being told by the corporate media, a robot's going to take your job tomorrow. And workers should be concerned about unplanned technology of any sort. Who knows what it's going to do, you know, in terms of its dangerous capabilities and military capabilities.
Driverless cars.
Yeah, driverless cars killing people.
They want to do that with the trucks.
Yeah.
Or let's get rid of the truck drivers. Yeah. We can just have a truck drive right, up to, you know.
Yeah, save a lot of money. No salaries. But you're also going to be maintaining a robot or more, and the infrastructure around a robot, and you're going to need people to do that. So it gets very complicated. It's not this, like, what I'm trying to say, it's not this straight upward, forward thing. If you graft automation under capitalism, it's got a lot of dips. And I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm saying that's part of the inefficiency of capitalism. The waste and inefficiency under capitalism is horrible. You know, you can look at any industry. Look at pharmaceuticals. You know, what if they were sharing that knowledge and the research? What if the government was doing that research like it used to? You'd have these cures like crazy. You could explode that industry in a good way. You know, really, really expand it. And instead, there's cases recently of complete failures. You know, companies start up, all these wonderful entrepreneurial startups, they get going, they reach a dead end, they just crash and burn. And then so much has been wasted in that attempt. Some other company succeeds and then starts charging, like that guy that is in jail now, I think. Remember, he was just buying companies up and then jacking up the price for EpiPens or whatever. It's an incredibly inefficient system, incredibly wasteful system. But it has its like its little diamonds here and there. We've discovered this. Then you look into it and you find out you discovered that because the government actually discovered it first. And
then the internet.
Then you ran with it, yeah. Or you discovered that because a bunch of millionaires and billionaires pulled their resources through this corporation, their ill-gotten gains, you know, off of exploiting labor and nature. And then, so it cost billions of dollars to come up with this little thing that now you're going to try to screw people over on, by charging billions of dollars. And maybe the market won't be able to bear it. That's another thing. You hear this, like, what the market will bear. I love that. That's their excuse for jacking up prices on everything. The stuff we were talking about earlier about utilities to something else. What the market will bear. Why are you charging that much? Because the market will bear it. The market bears it. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah.
They actually say that. They say it in public. They say it to your face. It's what the market will bear. Well,
Bloomberg?
What about the part that can't bear it?
You know, business thing.
All the time.
They become a George Carlin going, you know, what is pre this and pre that?
What is market will? What is market will bear? Is that everybody at once? Every consumer, every individual that must consume your stinking product is equally affected? No. Rich people can go and fill up their shopping cart at the Amazon automated store or whatever. And the poor folk, or most working people, can't even put one thing in that shopping cart and can't find your stupid little store to begin with. So, see you later, you know. It's the market will bear, yeah, until it crashes, right? 2007, 2008, 1929, whatever. By the way, though, did we finish talking about the hotel workers? I guess we did.
No. Well, it was about the Yankees crossing the picket line.
Well, I think we finished that. We hate the Yankees, basically. We already hated them. We hate them more. The Yankees scabbed, man. They crossed the picket line on the hotel strikers in Boston.
I think you're going to do a PSA.
Oh, yeah. I was going to do a PSA, public service announcement. Yay. Okay, so here we go. We're going old school here with the PSA
notebook. Where's the one with the computer?
Oh, you like that one? I don't know if I can find that quickly. These are looking a little old, the ones in the book, unfortunately. I like the book a lot better than doing it online. The ones with the computer. I don't know if I can find that.
More numbers to think about.
Yeah, Food Not Bombs PSA. That looks a little old, but Blackout Emergency Preparedness, that fits with our thing on... that fits what we were talking about. So I don't know why I'm being picky here, because I like a lot of these. Let's talk about pedestrian safety for 1 second, as we're talking about driverless cars. Pedestrian safety, public service announcements, got a picture, an Abbey Road picture on here. Pedestrian safety, you know, with the Beatles when they walked across Abbey Road, that iconic picture.
Yep.
Yeah. Pedestrian safety is a two-way street. Both drivers and walkers need to do their part to keep roads safe. This is one of these preachy, moralistic PSAs. When you're driving, drive at safe speeds, drive alert, and always scan the road and sidewalks ahead for pedestrians. It's the law to stop for pedestrians when they're crossing at both marked crosswalks and intersections. When you're walking, remember that drivers may not see you. Continue to watch for traffic as you cross. Always use crosswalks and obey all traffic signals. A life-saving message from your friends at WMFO in Medford. That was relatively painless. We could deconstruct that PSA for a while. Things are falling.
They're not everywhere. You ever notice infrastructures compared to Boston and, let's say, Houston or somewhere, like, it's all interstates.
Well, also the volume of traffic.
So to cross one of those, like Houston,
instance.
No. It's insane. You got to get hit by something.
People do get hit. Someone died on I-95 at a place near where I... take
so
that
you know
road.
What I'm talking about. It's like
about 2 weeks ago.
The streets are more where where even in this state you have places like where you live where it's all interstate. The streets are interstate.
Actually, where I live, it's a mix, but a bad mix, because you have places where, as people have talked about.
I mean, do you even have any sidewalks?
That's what I was gonna say. Yeah, you read my mind. I'm supposed to go out and get healthy because I'm overweight, right? So I'm supposed to go out and get healthy. Well, I can't afford a gym. I don't have time for a gym. Okay, so, and that includes that includes the deals, by the way. So, no, I can't afford a bike. So, but I will walk if there were sidewalks. There's no sidewalks. Can't walk. The street is too busy where I live to walk. So you see people, I saw my next door neighbor the other day. He runs across the street. I felt really bad for him. He runs across the street. He's running in the ditch of the house across the street. The people across the street don't bother to like take care of that part of their lawn. So he's running through these high weeds so he won't get hit by like a huge truck or something. And I don't know where he was going. There's a gas station down in the corner of the street. So he's like running on people's lawns because there's no sidewalk. So, and this guy, they did this, like, they do these, like, this neighbor of mine, they do these, like, night out things. Do you ever heard of that? Like, they want the neighborhood, the people to go out. They do this in Cambridge and everywhere. This is the national night out, or this is the state or city night out, where everyone will maybe go to sit on your porch and walk around the block and like that. So, I saw him, he take his family to walk around the block one time, and he's doing the same thing. He's like in the ditch, on people's lawns. There's no sidewalks. There's no safe place to walk. So, you know, and then I'm like, okay, I'll go down to the high school. I'll walk around the track, you know, but that means I got to drive there because it's far enough away. I can't walk. So I drive away and walk around the track. So you get down there and there's like some team practicing or something. So you can't walk around the track, you know, then they just put in a bike path. I'll walk down the bike path. Now, where I live, that means they're like predators, you know, like not people, but like really literally wild animals. Like
foxes and coyotes.
Let's see. Should I go out on the bike track at night? I don't even know if it's open at night. When I have time to actually walk.
Like, what is that, a wild boar?
I hear that in my yard. Are you kidding? I was doing yard work and I heard somebody hissing at me.
And raccoons, they're vicious.
Hey, raccoons and rabid raccoons, forget about it. So it's this thing where like... you know, they want, you know, you go to the doctor, and the doctor's like, get some exercise. And I feel like, and there's some doctors I like, some are just like tools for the corporations. But I feel like saying, okay, well, I'm going to show you my schedule, my work schedule, picking up my kids from school, what I do politically, because I feel that's important. By the way, I'm for national health care, you scumbag. I wouldn't say that. So, and then I show them my schedule, or just leave off even the political stuff and just say, here's my work and childcare and so on schedule. When do I exercise? When's that going to happen? I mean, you know, especially if it's supposed to happen three or four times a week or whatever, you know, a minimum. It's, you know, you get me a shorter work week with no cut in pay. You get me a free gym pass. You get me a sidewalk in my neighborhood, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Then we'll talk about exercise. You wonder why most Americans are so fat? What is it, 80% are obese now? I heard some sort of weird statistic. Like 80% of Americans are overweight. That's a lot. I mean, that's like everyone, practically. And me included. And I'm like, this is a national emergency. This is a crisis. And the healthcare system, being for profit, of course, can't really touch it.
And show me an agriculture that actually feeds you the right way.
Oh, exactly. Well, they still don't know why. They still don't know why. Like 80% of Americans are so fat or whatever. And some of
France,
them say...
You would think there'd be more fat people in France. What would they eat?
There aren't. Yeah.
But there are.
The food's better, too. But I bet they're getting fatter in France, too, though. I have to check that out. I'm not sure. I could be totally wrong. But not as bad as here. But so... Yeah. But they do talk about... Every once in a while, even in the corporate media, they'll say something like, scientists are speculating that there's something with the food production. No kidding. No freaking kidding.
I mean,
food production on a corporate level.
High corn fructose.
Yeah, fructose.
This is the only country in the world that is not outlawed.
Really?
It's in everything.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Look it up.
Oh, I know I didn't know everyone outlawed it. Wow, I didn't know that.
I've been doing this. I've gone to every cereal, and if I see that, I don't get it.
I try to avoid it, too. But then what's the other thing I'm getting?
Same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But you go to places like Mexico, you remember Mexican Coca-Cola? Comes in a bottle.
Yes.
Guess what it's made of?
Sugarcane. Yeah, okay.
No fructose.
Fructose, yeah.
Yes, because it's against the law.
Yeah.
That's good. The difference.
Yeah, I wonder what NAFTA's going to do to that, though. But anyway, so we said we were going to go over some things that were happening, I think both locally and I have one thing internationally I want to mention really quick. Running out of time, so should we do like a lightning round of things here? First of all, I don't know where to start. Let's say, okay, something near and dear to my heart, Socialist Alternative out in Worcester, if you're out in Worcester, is having a public meeting, as will be my way to segue into question one, on the question one referendum, ballot referendum in Massachusetts happening in November for safe patient, ensure safe patient care, safe patient safe nursing limits. I always don't know how to like encapsulate what this is in a soundbite, and we don't have to do that. We're going to talk about it for a second. But these are a public meeting with a Socialist Alternative sponsoring a meeting with a Socialist Alternative speaker and a nurse from the Mass Nurse Association speaking Tuesday, October 16th, 2:30 p.m. at Worcester State University in the South Auditorium in the Student Center. South Auditorium and Student Center, Worcester State University, 2:30 p.m., Tuesday, October 16th. We just had a meeting at Clark University with a nurse speaking, and it went really well. And statewide, I've heard that it's even. 49% yes, 49% no of, you know, from some poll. Other polls have shown better than that. What's your sense? What do you think, Diego?
Like I was saying earlier, I feel like there's a hierarchy within, you know, where I'm working at.
Yeah.
Where the nurses, obviously, because they do the grunt work, versus, let's say, the doctors who actually just give you a prescription. Okay, this is what needs to get done. That's that.
But what's your feeling like, even like in your neighborhood, or do you see any vote yes on one side? In your neighborhood?
Not in my neighborhood.
No, okay.
Well, mostly in where I work, on Huntington Ave, where it's all, you know,
yeah.
It's the whole Longwood medical area.
I have one on my...
It's a lot of yes. It's,
yeah.
And I've seen maybe one no, but it's mostly yes.
So 2 years ago, I think it was, there was that question on the ballot for charter schools. They wanted to... The Democrats, by the way, and the Republicans, and all the rich people in both parties wanted to...
They wanted,
In the corporate parties, I shouldn't say both parties. They wanted to... get rid of a cap on new charter schools in Massachusetts to increase the number of charter schools. This is privatization of education for profit, state money going into education for profit. I mean, it's a nightmare. Teachers hate it. Students, a lot of people don't like it. Unions don't like it. Charter schools are notoriously anti-union. And obviously the solution is to make public education much, much better and not to create a private profit thing that will not help.
Backwards and away from the public system.
Exactly.
So that the
going back to the 19th century.
So it's just for the elite. And
Pretty soon we'll have Ichabod Crane going town to town. I don't know if you've read that story, teaching the headless horseman and all that. Anyway, we won. Well, the point I'm getting to is we won. The people, workers, we won that referendum against all odds. The corporate media was so much in favor of lifting that charter school cap. The liberals, Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan and all those people and the stinking liberal rotten blech on the radios, Boston, NPR, National Propaganda Radio, Seth Moulton, Elizabeth Warren. I mean, the I don't know about Elizabeth Warren. I have to double check that. But most Democrats, including Obama, by the way, they like charter schools. Big little dirty little secret. Got to learn. Got to stay awake, people. They like charter schools. They were all behind it, publicly propagandizing for it. And I was really in fear. Now, Socialist Alternative and a lot of other people were working on this campaign. It was being led by the teachers' union, one of the teachers' unions in Massachusetts. And in Worcester, where I do a lot of political work, there was they had an office, and people were going door-to-door and stuff. And I had a yard sign then for, was it Vote No on 2, I think it was?
Yes.
Yeah. And... I was really scared about that, but we ended up winning that by 65%. Like, people knew, hey, this is just money for big business. It's going to hurt public education more.
We pay screw enough that. Into it.
We pay enough property taxes, etc. Forget about it. So people were able to withstand the propaganda. This time, I'm not so sure, because what's happening is a wave of television ads like none I've ever seen. The hospitals apparently have more money than God. And they're for-profit hospitals for the most part, but even non-profit doesn't really mean non-profit, by the way. Someone working at Harvard University, you want to talk to me about non-profit for a minute? I will educate you about that in 2 seconds. You know, Harvard just got, for example, $9.6 billion in a capital campaign. That is donations. That doesn't go into their endowment. There's no restrictions on it whatsoever. And they're going to spend that on whatever the heck they want, which includes also investing in businesses. So there's nothing non-profit about Harvard, except they don't pay taxes. And so the nonprofit hospitals, but also the for-profit hospitals, are pouring their ill-gotten millions, making money off sick people, by the way, should be illegal in any decent society, and they're pouring that millions of dollars into TV ads that are insanely wrong and lying. They claim that nurses are against question one. They say, nurses say no on one. 86% or more of nurses are for a yes on one. There's some little professional nurses sub-union, not even a real union probably, not the Mass Nurses Association. That's a huge, vibrant union, Mass Nurses Association. There's some little sub-head union that somebody told me they came out against it, and that includes some upper-level administrative nurses or something. Indicative of the entire... even
a lot
close.
Of nurses got these buttons now, and you don't understand.
What do they say?
It says MN... What's it?
MNA, yeah.
MNA.
Yeah.
Vote yes.
I want one of those, man. Can you get me one? I'll ask
one of the nurses
tonight. I'd love to have one. See. We're running out of time. November 6th is the vote, but if you can get me one. I got a yard sign in my yard, vote yes on one. I promised one to my friend. I haven't gotten it yet. My friend Corey. Corey, if you're listening, I'm going to get you that sign. Don't worry. Anyway, the thing I'm worried about, though, is I don't necessarily listen to the polls, but what happened is you have this combination of an incredible number of TV ads that just lie their butt off at people, Plus, you have the state weighing in and doing a false, false study to try to tell people that, well, we're objective and we think this would cost X amount of money if implemented. Well, think about that for a second. I'm gonna read from something about that in a second. But think about that. Say that they say this is going to cost $1 billion more dollars or $2 billion more dollars in healthcare costs if this is implemented. As a socialist, as a worker, what do I say to that? I say, great, yes, lovely. We need $4 billion more for nurses and decent healthcare. What's the money supposed to be for, you idiots? For your profits? For your to make you a richer idiot? That's what the money's supposed to go for? That makes sense to you? The corporation makes more money and people have less money spent on healthcare? That's what you think this is about? It's about healthcare. These people belong in prison. The corporate executives running the Vote No campaign, they belong in prison with a long period of rehabilitation. Put an anklet bracelet on those people because they're dangerous to society. You know how many people are going to die if question one goes down to no? People are going to die from that. They're not going to get the health care they need. We're talking about ICU units, you know, intensive care units, where they don't have enough nurses. And one nurse is supposed to take care of four critically ill people, you know?
Yep.
Say you had two or three nurses, maybe just a few more might live. They will live, you know? This is the kind of thing that happens under capitalism every day. You were talking about murder. What was the thing you said?
Murder
under capitalism. This fits the theme for today's show. Murder under capitalism. Yep. This is not a benign thing about...
I thought of that because of what happened with the utility thing and you know, Lawrence. The pipe, you know, just one simple $25,000 gauge there that, you know, that could have prevented the whole thing.
Yep. Well,
we don't want to,
paying a few more...
That's too much money.
Paying a few more nurses in each hospital... Hiring more nurses, right. And instead, no, we're about making money off sick people, off of death. These are like the Grim Reaper. Capitalism is like the Grim frickin' Reaper.
On the weekends. Like, I don't usually work weekends. Like, I have to go to work today, because I agreed. All right, whatever, and it's a little more money. But still, on the weekends, they have less nurses, and all the patients still there.
Yep.
So now instead of having 10, you got 3 nurses taking care of, 20, 25 whatever unit.
Yeah, we could do a whole show on what hospitals have turned into.
Oh, but because it's the weekend, it's not busy.
What do you mean?
What do you mean not busy? This person dies, and no matter if it's a weekend or not,
Yeah. Well, this goes into like there's a general push for national health care that waxes and wanes, and I've been part of this personally. Now we're calling it Medicare for All or Improved and Extended Medicare for All. I like that better than single payer. By the way, single payer never made any sense to me, but as a popularized slogan for national health care, what I'd really like to see is socialized medicine or socialist medicine or whatever. But like a national health care system like in Britain. But here's the deal, right? There's so many things wrong with health care now in the United States and in other countries too, but especially the United States that. A lot of things are not being addressed, or they're addressed for a minute. Some sort of like movement or pseudo movement gets going to fight, and then it's gone. Think about, for example, what you've been hearing lately about ambulances. You've heard about this probably, right? Now, all of a sudden, I don't know when this started. I haven't had to take an ambulance for a long time, but like a decade ago was the last time I took an ambulance or something. But now, apparently, if you take an ambulance, your insurance might not cover it. And if you don't have insurance, you're really screwed.
Oh,
because even if you do, maybe, and if you don't, forget about it. You're going to get charged like $10,000 for an ambulance ride or $5,000. You didn't hear about this?
Even more?
You have to study this. Yeah, it's like really absurd the amount of money that they're charging for ambulance rides now. And I know people that are EMTs. EMTs, I don't know, maybe this is not the case anymore, but back in the 90s when I knew some EMTs in 2000s, they were usually firefighters. Or nurses making extra money. Now I know at least a couple of younger people that it's sort of they're going to school but also doing EMT stuff. What the heck do they think about that? They must be, I mean, the ones I know must be outraged. Well, the ones I knew and the ones I know must be outraged.
I've been doing a lot of networking with people over there, like trying to get out of the kitchen thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I ask any EMT person, you don't mind me asking, how much did they make?
Oh, they don't make crap.
I make 12.
Yeah. They make crap.
I said 12, and you put up with all this.
Yeah, you're like a doctor almost, and you make $12 an hour.
I mean, and I have to see people get shot at. Yeah, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
No, it's insane.
This person, you know,
they need they need unions so bad. I don't know why they don't have them more. But what I'm talking about is that, that I knew about. I knew about low, rotten conditions and pay for EMTs, and it's an outrage. That's another thing to add to the list, right? But on top of that now, you've got these ambulance rides. An ambulance ride is, like, so much money. So I'm listening to this show, like, on National Propaganda Radio or something, and they're talking about, well, why don't people just go and take Ubers and Lyfts to the hospital? Okay, I'm going to bleed over someone's car. I'm going to cough and throw up in someone's car. I mean, are you kidding? What are you talking about? Because this is cheaper, so much cheaper than ambulances. But why do we have to ration ambulances? That's insane. And then on top of that, think about what we mentioned in passing earlier, pharmaceuticals. All these drugs going up, some of them going up by exponential numbers. Drugs that people need to survive, diabetes drugs, EpiPen for allergies, etc. Yeah, there's outrage for about two news cycles, right? And then it's like back to those, they're raking in millions of dollars, and Congress may have a hearing about it or something. You know, all this stuff could be taken care of all at one fell swoop with nationalized health care run in a democratic manner with a lot of public oversight input, you know? Like local boards at every hospital elected, subject to recall, the way you would vote some sort of city thing, you know, like I'm voting for comptroller, or I'm voting for, some sort of regulatory thing in a city. I'm voting for a city treasurer or something. You should be voting for a city healthcare monitoring, city healthcare committee, whatever, you know. That should be in every town, city, neighborhood, whatever. So it's part of a mass
public
movement.
Public domain and go back to, you know, instead of being on the one conglomerate.
Yeah.
Go back to
not have the corporations
that's
at all.
That's what I mean. Right?
Yeah.
You got Boston Medical, used to be Boston Public City Hospital.
But even go further
than
that, even
Alliance, used to be Cambridge City
Hospital. Right. But even go further than that and back to, I mean, even then they were like nonprofits. Now they're for profit. But even just go back to like every single medical facility. There could still be some private care but the majority of medical facilities, and by what I mean by private care is that, you know, if you have some like wacko rich person that wants to spend $1 billion on something, whatever. But that's not the, you want the vast majority of medical facilities, the infrastructure, to be under public ownership, basically through nationalization and through networks that you set up where you can have some democratic control over them. And even just moving into that way of a national healthcare system, socialized medicine, whatever you want to call it, you'd see this stuff start to disappear, the incredibly weird, grotesque stuff happening under capitalist medicine in the United States and other places. For example, again, you have, by the way, it's not just the United States. I mean, there are countries like, my understanding of China right now is they got rid of, over the last couple decades, or even maybe longer, they got rid of the equivalent of national health care, and it's all private now, and it's just crap. But anyway, leaving that aside, so you have a situation in the United States where, like, that thing we were talking about earlier with the nursing homes, which are now big corporations, charging whatever they want, apparently, for nursing home care, and what the market will bear, quote-unquote, is now apparently $14,000, $15,000 a month. I'm sure there's fluctuations, but it's all too much. So you start to move towards national health care, and you're going to see the businesses are going to panic, man. They're going to fight it tooth and nail, like the way they're fighting question one. But they're also going to have to start, some of that stuff is going to, they're going to give up, you know. They're going to say, okay, you know, 10% increase instead of 50% on the EpiPen or something like that, you know what I mean? But it's not enough. I'm just saying that a real movement towards national health care will start to have immediate effects, even if it doesn't accomplish everything all at once. But right now, we got nothing. You know, Sanders will make a speech, I'm for Medicare for all or whatever, and then not do anything to build a movement on it because he's in the Democratic Party. You know, we need a movement outside of that. And it's got to be part of a political movement. It's got to be part of the labor movement, the whole thing. Anyway, we promised you a lightning round, and we spent a lot of time talking about question one. Just vote yes on one. Go to voteyesonone.org. I think it is. I think I did that the other day. And you get a lot of information about why you should vote yes. And you're basically what you're voting for. So there'll be more nurses taking care of sick people. The hospitals cut back all they can on basic hospital care, nursing care. And it's obviously deadly what they're doing. And by the way, if you want to find out this thing, we're kind of running out of time. Quote, new study finds hospital executives grossly exaggerating cost of question one. Go to massnurses.org from September 10th, 2018. And there's a study is right there. And they break it down how ridiculous it is. California, by the way, has this already. So if this was going to bankrupt the state, these hospitals and state medical facilities. Well, there are no state medical facilities hardly, but
how come,
you know,
the campaigns for yes doesn't say California already has it?
It does. This is what I'm quoting from.
Oh, okay.
I'll give you an example. The study utilizes real-time data from the Massachusetts Health. Sorry, I got distracted by another thingy. Massachusetts Health and Hospital Association and matching data comparing staffing levels and costs with the California industry. The $47 million cost estimate was derived by calculating a proportion of RNs to total Massachusetts hospital personnel equivalent to California, where RN to patient limits have been in effect. Listen to this. I didn't know this. I should have known this. Nurse to patient ratio limits have been in effect since July 1st, 2004. My impression was the California change had been more recent than that. So they've been surviving for 14 years, if I'm doing the math right, without any problems. The proportion of RN full-time equivalents to total hospital personnel in California is 30%, as compared to the average Massachusetts of 27%. The total annual estimated cost of RNs on medical, surgical, step-down, behavioral, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to go through all that. It's a lot of verbiage. But based on this formula, 37 Massachusetts hospitals, or 55%, would have no increase in costs. The majority of Massachusetts hospitals could easily meet the requirements of the law simply by shifting approximately 3% of the proportion of the budget they're currently allocated to non-direct care managers and hospital administrators. See, that means that some of those rich administrators are going to take a cut in pay. That's why they hate this. One of the main reasons. To RNs and hospital unit staff who provide direct patient care, as was done in California hospitals after the enactment of their law. At the end of the day, we estimate that after implementing the limits... question one, our state's hospitals would still retain a mean profit, I would underscore the word mean, of 15 margin of $15 million a year, et cetera. So anyway, I wish I had more time to read from that. It's a good refutation of that study. And also, they've had... Question one has done good, sponsored by M&A. They've done good door-to-door work from what I can see. But there's a couple things they're leaving out, in my opinion, and this is friendly criticism. They need to put some resources, at least, into, and you can volunteer for this. You can get in touch with the Mass Nurses Association and volunteer to help. They need to put more resources into what we used to call standouts. In Massachusetts, I don't know about most places, a standout is, say you have some guy, usually some Democrat or something, running for office, and they'll just put they'll just have supporters stand out on a busy street corner with their sign, or usually just a name, because that's what politics is so infantile in the United States. It's like, this individual is a nice guy, nice woman. I think I'll vote for them. And forgetting it's the Democratic Party and Republican Party, it's corporate politics. No matter how nice they might be, they're going to do the bidding of the capitalists if they're going to stay in those parties, if they're going to get elected and stay in those parties. So people are really just judging individuals instead of and missing institutions for the most part. But it's still an effective tactic. The standout gets that name in people's minds. So if they do go to vote, they might vote that name. Standout gets information out if you have more than just a name on your sign. And referendum questions have done standouts before. I haven't seen much standing out for M&A for this question. I think they need to do more standouts. I think they also need to, and this is an idea that a member of Social Alternative who's a nurse had. He feels like going to grocery store parking lots, which you have a right to do with a referendum in Massachusetts, go to grocery store parking lots and talk to people there. And you hit more people, more potential voters than when you go door-to-door, because there's problems going door-to-door, which I experienced when I've done door-to-door stuff. People not home, people don't want to answer the door, people that aren't registered. Now, that gathers information for whoever's going door-to-door. Like when we did the Social Alternative did the Shama campaign, Shama SWAT campaign in Seattle, and I helped with that. You learn a lot going door-to-door about the constituency, about the voters, about the neighborhood, about the community. You learn a lot. It's valuable information. We inputted all of it. It's just great stuff. But you also have the goal of a fastly approaching deadline on a vote, whether it's a referendum or an election. This referendum deadline's coming up quick. November 6th is the vote, less than a month. There's got to be more people out in the parking lots of grocery stores, big grocery stores. There's got to be more standouts. You know, there's got to be more done. Door-to-door is great. Keep doing door-to-door, but you got to let some resources go or develop more new resources for other stuff as well. Back to the lightning round. Catalonia, the reason we're mentioning this today might seem like a real jump, and it is. This Catalonia is in a part of Spain, unfortunately, should be independent. There was this powerful, huge student general strike on October 1st. I saw nothing about it in the corporate media. Zero, zero. And the Spanish government, capitalist government, supposedly part of the free world, quote unquote, has come down on the Catalonian independence movement like basically like a militaristic, you know, like a military police state.
They've been doing since Franco.
Yeah, it's back to Franco's. It's back to Franco tactics by a government that I don't know. I forget what the current government is like, but it's real. It's in terms of their label. Like, yeah. It goes from like in reality socialism liberal to conservative, so-called socialist. Yeah, but anyway, so there's a big general strike. You should check it out. More than 150,000 young people out. Despite horrible repression, I mean, you got to understand the police are given green lights now in Catalonia to attack protesters, to go into voting places and break them up. I mean, it is really bad. Maybe I can do a quick thing. A demonstration in Barcelona with more than 100,000 students from schools and universities paralyzed all the main roads in Barcelona and filled Sant Joan Huame Square. I don't know how to say it. Nah, but see, they speak Catalan, so I don't know how to pronounce it.
Oh, okay, never mind. Had a French thing to it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I was like, wait a minute, that's not...
Yeah, it's a combination of Spanish and French, in a way. Thousands came out in other towns, they list them. This is an unquestionable demonstration of the strength of the youth and struggle for a Catalan republic, for the freedom of political prisoners, like we were just talking about, there's a lot of political prisoners now, and the return of the exiles and the end of Francoist state repression. You called it Francoist state repression. On the one-year anniversary of the historic 1 October 2017, when the Catalan people defeated repression by the regime of 1978 and voted for a Catalan Republic, hundreds of thousands again took over the streets. In Barcelona, the atmosphere was of great enthusiasm and combativity, singing songs and chanting for the freedom of political prisoners against police repression. Now what I heard about this Catalonia recently in the corporate media, and this was before this rally, was I hear this rally... And I was really surprised because it was people that were against Catalonian independence in Barcelona. I'm like, well, that's a little odd. I know there's some, but they had a rally. And they said there were thousands on the street, right? Thousands. Well, okay, let's look into that a little bit. So I looked into it, it was about 2,000, 3,000. It's nothing compared to what they usually get out for this sort of thing. The next day, there was a pro-independence rally of tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands.
Outnumbered.
Totally, completely dwarfed the other one. But that didn't get media. I only knew about it through sources on the internet, left-wing sources on the internet. Anyway, so this is a really great movement. I wish I was there to participate. I would learn Catalan somehow and be out there for Catalan independence. This is worth a lot more discussion than we have time for. We're almost out of time. This is why, if you listen to Social Alternative Radio, you're like, why are they criticizing the Democrats? If you're some sort of new to politics or you're liberal or whatever and you think the Democrats are progressive, because the Democrats aren't progressive in so many ways on the day-to-day level, where they hold power, like in Massachusetts, when they get into the presidency, we have memories, those of us that have lived through it, of the Clinton administration, the Obama administration. I mean, Obama came in to office, his administration promising the Employee Free Choice Act was supposed to help unions. This garnered a lot of union support, then didn't even introduce that as a bill, never went anywhere, just to give one quick example. Out in California, we're talking about health care. Last year, there was a health care single-payer referendum ready to, the people were totally behind it, vast majority behind it. The Democrats found a legalistic maneuver to not let the referendum go through. This had the approval of Pelosi, of Governor Jerry Brown, and others. So, you know, I could go down the list. Every day there's something new that goes against the narrative of Democrats being more progressive than Republicans. I'm not saying Republicans are more progressive. They're not. But there's equivalencies. And I'm not saying they're not different. They're different. Sometimes the Democrats will take a good stance on something They won't back it up with anything. Like, they're against Kavanaugh. That's good. Did they, you know, really pull out all the stops, do a mass movement? No, they didn't.
Some even crossed over.
Yeah, there was one that crossed over. There was others that said, like Pelosi said infamously last week, we're not going to hold it against Democrats to vote for Kavanaugh. By the way, Pelosi also said recently, you really have to pay attention to this, people, because it gives you an example of our future. I think it's likely the Democrats will take over the House. It's not definite. They might even make big inroads in the Senate. Last time the Democrats had complete control of the House and Senate and presidency, first 2 years of Obama, they didn't do anything significant. They passed the Obamacare thing, which actually helped corporations more than the provisions that helped people.
Don't you hear that?
And that's getting torn
Elizabeth
apart.
Elizabeth wants to run.
Yeah, Elizabeth Warren wants to run. She's not progressive in a lot of ways, no. Which we'll get into. That's a great idea. I'm glad you mentioned that. We should have a whole show about her.
We'll do that next time.
Yeah, we should do that. But anyway, what I'm getting at is that, you know, here's the latest outrage that goes against the narrative of progressive Democrats. And this is a great example because it's a place where Democrats, like Massachusetts, don't get really challenged. Even when you have a Republican governor from time to time in Massachusetts, they act like a Democrat, like Baker, for example.
He came on after the, you know, the whole common area went down after the explosions and everything.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Oh, he was horrible. Yep. The what I'm getting at right now is Washington, D.C., you know, the city of Washington, D.C., all Democrats in the city council. And I haven't done the research, but I would imagine, probably all Democrats forever in the city council. Many of them would be labeled progressive. And just like in California last year, there was a very popular referendum, but this time it wasn't for healthcare. It was for tipped workers to get to go up to $15 an hour. So there was a referendum to raise the wages of tipped workers from $3.89, which is their current wage, and you heard that right, $3.89 an hour, because they get tips, they suppose they don't need any money, until it matched the standard minimum wage in 2026. So in a way, it was a very conservative, relatively speaking, referendum. You know, this wouldn't happen fully till 2026. Then they would make, you know, by then, hopefully 15 or whatever. Now, it passed. It passed by a huge amount. And I mentioned this on another show. I don't know if I can find that statistic. But the voters in Washington, D.C. were really behind this initiative to help some of the poorest workers in Washington, D.C. 56%, there we go. 56% of voters approved of what's called Initiative 77 in the city's June primary election. So we're talking about just a few months ago in June. 56% of voters approved of Initiative 77. So guess what happened right after that? Did you hear about this? Nobody's heard about it. You got to dig for it. Actually, I got it from the Washington Post, so some people have heard about it. But anyway, the Democrats decided they didn't like it. They got pressure from their bosses in the, you know, their capitalist bosses in the restaurant industry and so on, and the hotel industry and all that. We're told, we don't like that. We don't care if the people pass it on. You got to get it undone. You got to undo that. Democrats did it. They marched right to the tune of the corporations and the majority. Voted, this is from the Washington Post, October 2nd, you should read this article, D.C. Council overturns wage hike for bartenders, servers, 4 months after voters approved it. There were some Democrats that voted to keep it, but the majority, and this has been going on, I've been following this story, this has been going on for months now, there's been no huge like movement against it or even attempted movement against it, so even the Democrats that voted to keep the measure, just I don't think they meant it really strongly, but let's leave that aside. The majority of Democrats on the city council voted to undo the whole thing, undo what the voters voted for. It's real democratic, free country, free world. We're part of the free world. Yeah. Free for corporations. This is in a... the restaurant industry said the initiative would hurt the district's thriving dining scene, and some workers at high-end establishments said they earned more than the minimum wage and tips and did not want changes. Yeah, that's about three workers said that. Anyway, it was a good law. It was really just a little Band-Aid, and it passed enormously. And yet the Democratic Party City Council majority decided to destroy it. This is the fifth time D.C. lawmakers, meaning Democratic Party, voided a ballot measure. Previous initiatives would have imposed term limits, campaign finance restrictions. That goes against some self-interest there, huh? Mandatory minimum jail sentences and sweeping right to shelter for homeless people. Wow. Again, free world, huh? Free country. Yeah. You vote for something and it gets turned out. So we're definitely out of time. Thanks for listening to Socialist Alternative. We'll get to some things. We had some good stuff about Trump and that recent revelations. Please read up on Trump not being the self-made millionaire he said he was. But he got like four, him and his siblings got $450 million from his father. You got to read about this stuff. I got a thing from Jacobin. And
he was born with a silver spoon.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, totally. It's always, you know, all those Horatio Alger stories, they usually fall apart, almost all of them. The Times Trump expose is a compelling case for class war. That's from New York Mag and the Daily Intelligencer. And then I had a thing from Jacobin, how the Trumps got rich, by Samuel Stein. And where's the date, Samuel? 2016, August 2016. So anyway, we're out of time. Thanks for listening to Socialist Alternative. Radio will be here in 2 weeks. Last words, Diego.
Power to the people.
And we're going to...
And the nurses.
We're going to vote yes on question one. We're going to go out with that song we rudely interrupted before by Gil Scott-Heron that you may recognize. And thanks for listening.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Keyes, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Starting I see it in your eyes. I used to love a good surprise, and now I'd rather know ahead of time. You said I love you too fast. So much for that, 'cause summer just started and we're already done.